Severe weather was a frequent news story this year. It seemed almost every week this spring there was at least a night or two when severe thunderstorms or tornadoes threatened part of the region. An important part of weather spotting is the network of ham radio operators in the area. In June, many of those operators gathered for field days, 24-hour challenges to assemble radios quickly, and then contact fellow ham operators in as many locations as possible. That month, we met two members of the Fort Smith Area Amateur Radio Club in advance of their field day. Wayne Johnson's ham setup is upstairs at his home. It's an immaculate room without a single wire showing. He uses the radios here to talk to other people around the state and around the world. It was severe weather that led to his interest in ham radio. After a tornado hit Greenwood in 1968 and killed more than a dozen people, he decided to help start a local network to help spot storms.
Got my license, and first thing I did right off the bat was to contact the local weather office out here in Fort Smith at that time and see if we could set up a network of hams to report severe weather and spotters around the area and give them information to help them predict severe weather. So that's how I got started and worked out real good, and I've been doing it ever since.
Wayne Johnson says when severe weather appears to be on the horizon, the National Weather Service may call him, and then he'll go to the sheriff's office in Sebastian County, where trained ham operators have direct links to the weather service.
The thinking is that if you could help prevent that by getting warnings out, by helping the weather service get warnings out quicker, that you might save some lives. Plus, we do other stuff, too. This ham radio could be set up and go out in the field and set up a ham station within 30 minutes and be on the air. Nowadays, if you have a tornado hit a town or earthquake or whatever, the telephones will be out of order, the electricity will be off, cell phones will be out of commission, and no way of communicating, and where the hams can come move into an area real quick and within 30 or 45 minutes be on the air and passing out or getting help to come in or passing the information out to the surrounding areas to get help in.
Hams were valuable contacts in the immediate aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, and they can travel light and set up in the field in just about 30 minutes. Many operators have emergency generators ready to power their equipment anywhere. And while cell phone towers may lose power in a disaster or become overloaded, ham operators may only require the radio, a generator, and a single wire for an antenna, and they're ready to communicate. As for severe weather spotting, operators have been able to, at times, provide eyewitness reports that allow the National Weather Service to issue tornado warnings up to 20 minutes earlier than they'd be able to otherwise. Literally, a life-saving service. The field day events next weekend will allow operators to practice setting up and contacting people in an emergency situation. Jim Ruffley is another member of the Fort Smith Area Amateur Radio Club.
And the idea is to make a contact with as many stations as you can. Doesn't make any difference where they are, just make a contact. That's the contest part of it. The other part of it is, like I say, setting it all up. And we're running under emergency power, separate generators and so forth.
And you do it to last in 12 hours or 24 hours nonstop.
It's not all emergency work for ham radio enthusiasts. It's also an engaging hobby. Jim Ruffley is keen on something called DXing, long-distance communications. There are 338 separate entities designated by the American Radio Relay League. DXers try to connect with each of those areas around the world over the course of a lifetime. Jim Ruffley's made contact with all 338 zones. The last one for him was Scarborough Reef, a rock basically in the middle of the Indian Ocean. Nobody lives there, so DX enthusiasts have to wait for volunteers to set up shop, something they call DXpeditions.
These guys, they were, I don't know, about 25 guys and a gal, and they rented this boat and the captain and all that, and they went to that location and set up stations on those rocks, and then they started communicating, and they were there for about 2 weeks, I guess, close to 2 weeks.
Around the clock?
Around the clock, operating around the clock, because there's nobody lives on a rock, unless it's a bug or something like that. So those are extremely rare places like that. And another place that's very rare, that's got a lot of people in it, is North Korea, but it's a closed society.
For a few years, there was, Jim says, one fellow in North Korea operating, but he was encouraged to shut down by the North Korean government. Successful connections are confirmed with cards sent out by the operators contacted. And there are other facets of ham radio. Some operators like to bounce a signal off the moon to another ham radio operator. And some, like Jim Ruffley, enjoy sending and receiving Morse code. Jim's been at this for a while. He still has the first radio he bought when he was 13, and it still works.
It cost me $100, and I got a good deal on it. It was usually selling for $150. In 1957, that was a lot of money. But I had to mow a lot of lawns to buy for the same.
Radios can cost a bit more now. Wayne and Jim laugh when asked how much it costs to adopt this hobby. However much you want to spend, they say. And if you see Jim Ruffley at Columbus Acres in Fort Smith, you can ask him for a Morse code demonstration.
This would be, your name is Kyle, K-Y-L-E. That's Kyle in code.
How about Ozarks at large?
Ozarks at large.
Yeah.
That story first aired on Ozarks at Large this past June.